Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunnerstown. And gents, this time last week we were sitting in this very studio bemoaning the fact that Arsenal and Chelsea have only been given 6,000 tickets each for that Europa League final. It's a paltry figure, we were saying. Not nearly enough for the demand of the supporters to see their teams in a European final. Fast forward 7 days, Arsenal have sold a reported 3,000 tickets. It's looking like they could go on general sale. And Chelsea struggling to even shift 1,000. What's going on?
Money, money, money.
Yeah, funny thing is, last week I was kind of sure that we'd take up our allocation. But yeah, it's been really... I think people have voted by their pockets, really, and just decided it's too far to go.
The average fan cannot afford to go to somewhere like this. Just, I did some really, really rough calculations looking at booking.com and things a minute ago. So flight, if I had a ticket, which is probably about 50 quid, to get to... All right, if we're going to be precise, mate. And 67 pence. If I had a ticket for roughly 50 quid... to get a flight to Tbilisi, not even to Baku, to Tbilisi.
Which I've heard is lovely this time of year, by the way.
It is,
yeah,
353 quid. Nice. Okay. But I've got to get... There's two options from Tbilisi, and I didn't look at the train option. I can either get a car, which means I've got to rent a car for about 130 quid plus petrol, or that's going to take... that's going to take 7 hours and 33 minutes to get there if I drove from Tbilisi.
So this is once you've done the full checking in your bag, security, you've flown to Tbilisi, you're then looking at 7.5 hours of driving. If you need a breather, by the way, having flown before a 7.5 hour drive or a meal or whatever, you're adding however much that'll be.
Exactly. The other option is I could walk, which is 110 hours. So I'm going to be leaving...
From London?
I'm going to be leaving in about 10 minutes.
That sounds... I'll see you there.
You can actually get a train from Tbilisi to Baku, but the thing about the trains from Tbilisi to Baku, there's only two a day. So if you miss it, you're done for. It's 15
Imagine
hours.
If that's your commuter train on the day of the final.
It's a 15-hour journey. So if you miss it,
It's a 15-hour train.
On train.
So we're now talking about, what is it, like a 7-hour flight?
What about renting a horse?
A mule.
Just plod your way over.
It's ridiculous. And so all of that, then you've got food, a couple of hundred quid, drink, a couple of hundred quid. Obviously, I've mentioned, the hotel. I found a hotel for £638. So all in, it's like 1,000. I reckon I could do it for about 1,570 quid, which is about 74% increase on my entire season ticket that I play.
And Arsenal, of course, have famously expensive season tickets, right? So even when we're dealing with a club who are already racking those prices up, it's extortionate.
Yeah, basically.
I cannot justify it. No. I've never been to a European Cup final.
Fair play to those that have done it.
I said to a few of the lads in February, if we get there, I'm going to find any means possible to get there. But when it actually the crunch came, I cannot spend £1,570 on a single football match.
Plus
and
the
that's
ticket.
why football fans are being we talk about being priced out. That is a classic example of being totally priced out.
Of course, the fans being priced out and this potential that Arsenal could not even take up all of their allocation might in a funny way take a bit of the pressure off UEFA, because we'd all been here complaining about the commercialism and saying, listen, you care more about sponsors than us. But they can now turn around and say, listen, we gave you more tickets than you needed. What more do you want?
The thing is, Europa League is not it's not as prestigious as the Champions League final. Hmm. If there's empty seats in that stadium and they're trying to showcase it around the world with all their sponsors, it's not going to look good. It's just not going to look good if you've got empty seats in the stadium.
But so they're going to have empty seats, aren't they? Because even if you're a sponsor and you're getting your tickets free, might you not look at it and go, Baku, thanks, but no thanks.
I suppose if you're a sponsor, it might well be all the expenses paid. But, I mean, as a spectacle for UEFA to try and promote that competition, it's just not a good look. if there's empty seats, swathes of empty seats around the stadium. So you, on the one hand, you might say that they've been let off the hook, but on the other hand, it's just going to make it doubly difficult for them to promote and get and generate cash next season. If they, because I think next season, I think it's either in Gdansk,
it is in Gdansk in Poland, yeah,
and then following season, I think it's into either Tbilisi or Seville. Now you'd say Seville, but apparently Seville stadium is a bit small. It's like 42,000 fans, and if over half the allocation is going to the football family, it's another problem. So it might well be in Tbilisi the following year.
So my hope from all of this is that it is actually half empty, because my hope is that the footballing world sees this and says, okay, this is unacceptable. There are the vast bulk of teams that get through to this final. You could probably go through the last 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, plot out where have those teams come from? France, Germany, Italy, Spain, England. So why don't we have, let's do some numbers here and not have it in the upper end of Hebrides, or whatever it is, the middle of nowhere.
The thing is, on the other hand, the Azerbaijani Football Association have been members of UEFA for 25 years. So UEFA will argue that one man, one vote, everyone has to get a go at it. Which is fine on one hand, but I think when you're doing that, you've got to look at the logistics. It's not easy. It's not an easy ride for any of us.
Do you know what that winds me?
And commercially, as you said, if there's going to be empty seats, if I'm a sponsor or a prospective sponsor, I'm not going to want to bother put my money towards to put my name on a UEFA League final next year in Gdansk when it's half empty. What's that doing for my
brand?
It's doing nothing for my brand.
Yeah, it's an absolute joke. Do you know what you just said there? The one man, one vote, or let's make sure we get round everyone. Mm. Doesn't it remind you of when you used to get like the kiddies 6 or 11-a-side football, and the manager would always pick someone different every week for man of the match, and by the time it got round to everyone, you'd be like, well, this trophy is completely worthless because everyone gets it once.
I was the one who got it on the last week.
Do you want a hug?
Yes, please, Chris. We'll do it in the break. There is also an argument, though, where we can see English fans responding to this all-English Europa League final and all-English Champions League final, and of course, in the case of the Europa League final, not just all English, but all London, and saying, listen, let's play it at Wembley, right? It's easier for everyone. It's cheaper for everyone. It's better for the environment. And I take that argument. But you can spin it the other way and say, listen, Baku, from an English fan's perspective, is a nightmare to get to. But actually, firstly, the point you make, Giles, that Azerbaijan have been in UEFA for very long and should be involved. But there's another point there, which is if you're trying to build up and establish football in countries where it isn't already this dominant powerhouse, surely the way of doing that, helping building up infrastructure, is taking fans there, bringing competitions there. Do you think that we just kind of have to bite the bullet and accept that this might be for the greater good of European football?
Well, the thing is, and this is going to sound controversial, I'm going to say allegedly. Is that a disclaimer? Is that what you say in radio world?
It doesn't make you automatically safe, by the way. But yeah, it's a good start.
There are soft politics at play.
There are. No, of course there are.
There are soft politics at play. Some of these regimes...
But there always are. They're always... With any tournament, wherever it's held. Yeah.
But there's certain regimes that want to put a good face onto the world, and they pay, they pay for the privilege of hosting these events.
The problem with that, from an Azerbaijani point of view, and you're spot on, but if they're trying to go, look, we're really open and accepting and everyone can come to Azerbaijan apart from you, Henrik, because you're Armenian, well, what good does that do?
No,
then?
On the news today, the Azerbaijanis, he's a foreign minister.
They might be letting him in, I hear.
Well, no, they say he can come in, but the problem has been the security detail around it. Can they guarantee his safety? And one of the higher ups.
He can come in, but he needs to wear a moustache and a top hat. Yeah.
He can come in if he's very, very brave.
Borat. But that's been the sticking point. But if it's going to be held there, do more for the fans. Don't just give it lip service. Do more for the fans.
Where's the contingencies? Why isn't somebody somewhere saying, well, why don't we have a contingency of putting on some more chartered flights?
Yeah.
That's point one. You've got people that are willing to do it, so you could put on an extra 100 flights with, 100 people on it.
And that's what I was really disappointed about the club with. I mean, last week they came out of this, we've asked UEFA why they've, you know, why they decided to hold it here and so on and so forth. And I thought to myself, you're just paying lip service. If you really, really did care about the fans, put on some flights. Help the fans out. You know, it's nearer Delhi than it is London. This venue, you know, it's a derriere ache to get to, and it costs the earth. So, you know, if you really are concerned about the fans, help them out and get them on a flight.
Absolutely spot on. Of course, one of those intrepid 3,000 Arsenal fans who is going to Baku is amongst your number at Gunners Town and amongst our number here on the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Charlie East, AFC Charlie, is going to get there by plane, train or swimming, and he'll be with us later on in the show to find out just how he's planning on doing it. But coming up, there are some fairly famous managers available in the summer, the likes of a certain Mr. Allegri spring to mind. And as an Arsenal fan looking at Unai Emery, do you stick or do you twist?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunners Town. And despite leading Juventus to an unprecedented 8th straight Serie A title, Massimiliano Allegri was sacked by the Turin club this summer. Pretty harsh, and he, of course, is not delighted about it, but is now available for work. And some Arsenal fans, perhaps a little unrealistically, are looking at that and getting on Twitter and saying, hang on a minute, there is a top-class European coach here with title-winning pedigree. I don't care about Emery. Let's get him into the club. Is that sensible?
Giles?
No, it's wishful thinking, as I said, on social media, but, I mean, one can dream. Look, Emery's done a good job. And the thing is, I am an Emery backer. I've supported him throughout the season, even during the downturn. I've had questions, but I've supported him during the season. And if he wins the Europa League, he's done a very good job. And ordinarily, you know, I'd say give him a second season. But, you know, when world-class managers come on the scene, and Allegri, whether you like his brand of football or not, is a world-class manager, proven winner, knows how to handle big stars, comes on the scene.
He's not going to need that at Arsenal.
Well, when I say that, I mean, you know, when he went to Milan, first thing he did was get rid of Abramovich, get rid of all the big stars, anyone that was sort of like that would challenge his authority, that were hemorrhaging the wages, got rid of them, you know, having won the league, and then turned it around with a younger set of players. I'm sure Milan must now rue the day that they ushered him out of the San Siro. But you know, he doesn't take any prisoners. He's a great tactician, defensively very sound. But you know, look, we've got Emery. It's only a pipe dream, and that's where I stand.
But even though we've got Emery, some fans, I suspect, would say, you know what? No disrespect to Unai, but as you were saying, Giles, when you get this opportunity, you have to say thank you for your service. But actually, a shinier model has become available. This is something that a lot of people are talking about with Manchester United and the potential availability of Allegri, the potential availability of, say, Thomas Tuchel, should he get sacked by PSG. They're saying, I don't care about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Axe him now and pounce. Do you think that that's callous?
I don't think so. But what I would say is I would suspect it's probably more realistic where United are at, and also with the cash that United have. That's probably the biggest differential. I think this is a moot point in terms of a discussion, if I'm completely honest, because we will not sack off Emery because there's money to be paid to him. And we do not, if you believe everything that's being said, have money to spend in the summer. We're doing everything on the cheap. And Allegri is somebody that's going to want to come in and say, I'm going to need to rip this team apart and start again in my own mould. Charles, what's the style? What's his playing style?
I don't think he particularly has a playing style. He's just quite...
winning.
You know, he's winning. That's his style. And that's what I like about him. He wins. You know, doesn't care about... I mean, you got someone like Sarri. People say, oh, if you don't like Emery, you won't like Allegri. Well, Sarri's even more of an ideologist than say Pep. Pep's willing to tweak his... Sarri does not. He's stubborn, he's obdurate. He wants to play in a certain way. Doesn't win you much. Didn't win him much. Allegri's a winner. Puts out teams to win.
If you were a winner, though, and if we accept that Allegri is a winner, is he going to look at this current Arsenal crop, because as Chris says, he's not going to have big money to spend in the summer. Is he going to look at the likes of Lichtsteiner and Ertzil and Iwobi and go, you know what, that's a squad of winners who I can mould into title winners?
I think he said that he's looking for a project.
So certainly
so let's just imagine for a moment Arsenal were considering or were approaching him. It's all about how they package that project to him. You know, we'll try and give you money, we've got X amount of money here, you know, if you can get us into the we're just about to get into the Champions League, there's money coming from Adidas and so on and so forth, you know, we'll allow you to tell us who you're going to keep and who you're not going to keep. He'll work with it. He's for him, he wants to see where the roadmap leads down the future. It's not just about here and now. He's obviously looking for a 3 or 4 year plan, and sees progression and sees, you know, what he wants to do is I suppose he wants to go back to being an old school manager, I guess, because I know he wanted more authority at Juventus and that was a sticking point of him. But I think, you know, look, if he wants a project, if we could package it correctly, why wouldn't he go for it?
Do you think in modern football, not just at Arsenal, but at any top club, we're ever going to get back to that world of the manager? Though, if you think about how many times on this show we've discussed who Arsenal's new director of football should be, if we cast our eyes back even 20 years when Wenger was first really taking the club over, that man ran everything, right? From the top to the bottom. That just doesn't happen anymore. And do you think the club would even a manager of Allegri's stature, do you think they'd be willing to offer him that?
No. I mean, today, Vinay and Raul were on Arsenal media. And they said that, you know, the key points of Arsenal this season has been the transition from the traditional style manager, the legacy manager of Wenger, into a head coach with a narrower responsibilities, but surrounded by experts. So I suppose Allegri would have to, you know, accept
experts that, like Steve Bold, Sven Mislintat, that we promptly booted out.
Experts in wearing shorts when it's really cold.
Yeah. So he'd have to obviously, you know, accept that situation. It's moving towards a modern, you know, in that head coach, director of football, technical director path, and he'd have to accept that. I know that from, because obviously I've followed him quite a lot, and I know that one of the sticking points of Juventus is he wanted more control over who they buy and who they sell.
Yeah, because something must have gone on to win a title and get sacked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think
he's had a falling out.
Yeah, I think the introduction of Ronaldo, I think, has kind of upset things a little bit there in terms of players. I think the manager's fallen out with Dybala. Dybala doesn't get as much playing time because he has to try and somehow fit in Ronaldo, and they're not playing to Ronaldo's strength. So there's lots of other things going on in the background. But also, I think he's just run his course. I think he's tired. They're tired of him. It's to come to a natural end.
You know, imagine having a manager wins you 8 leagues in a row, and you're like, I'm a bit bored of you now. Let's try something new.
Can we make this harder?
Let's try. Everyone's got to moonwalk the ball into the net from now on.
Worth a go. Arsenal try that on occasion. It doesn't seem to go very, very well. One man who's a bit more pragmatic is Danny Welbeck. Of course, he struggled with injury this season. He looked quite impressive under Emery until he started getting crocked. But even with those injuries, could he be set for one last hurrah? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunnerstown here on Love Sport Radio for your Arsenal fan show. And lads, we need to talk about Danny. He was having a lively season, a couple of dodgy injuries. He hasn't played since breaking his ankle in November. He's had a double surgery on that. Most of us Arsenal fans thought that was Arsenal career over. It's been announced that he's leaving the club at the end of the season as his contract comes to an end. We thought we'd seen the last of him in an Arsenal shirt, but we're hearing now that he could be set for a late comeback and the club could be considering taking him to the Europa League final. Now, it's a lovely story. We like Danny. He's a nice boy. He works hard. He smiles a lot. That's what my dad always says. I like that, Welbeck. He smiles a lot. The fact that he doesn't score many goals doesn't seem to matter because he's cheery. That said, he's not the only striker who's been injured in a lead-up to a European final, right? There's a conversation going on amongst Spurs fans. Harry Kane's been out. But if he's fit for the Champions League final, do you play him? Now, most Spurs fans obviously say, yeah, you play him. But he's Harry Kane. and he's the talisman and he's the target man and he scores those goals. I like Danny Welbeck. He smiles a lot. But is he worth throwing in after not playing any football for 6 months in Arsenal's first European final in 11 or so years just because he's fit?
Do you know what I would say? Yes. And the reason why I say yes is mainly because, not from the start, obviously, but you get 12 subs. Like UEFA...
You can't bring them all on, by the way.
I know that. But to even just have him there as an option so that you've got a consideration, not going to last.
Would you throw him on the pitch?
If we've got 5-10 minutes to go and we are down and we need to at least draw level, you know, I would, because what are the other options? What are the other options? We've got Nketiah, who, you know, he's looked okay at times, but he's still a young, raw player. Who else have we got up front? Let's just say we've already got Aubameyang and we've already got Lacazette on the pitch.
As we probably will.
Yeah. So who is the other attacking option that we might be able to consider? There aren't really any other Nketiah.
And obviously the club, we just heard that, you know, he scored a hat trick in a behind the closed doors arranged game. We've got another one against an Austrian team called Linz coming up this weekend. And I think that's all sort of like get the players prepared. Obviously, it's been two and a bit weeks since the last match. So trying to keep the players' fitness to a certain level. And it's an opportunity for Danny to throw his hat in the ring to say, look, pick me, I'll be available for selection. And why not? I mean, as you say, if we're chasing the game, we need some power, some energy. Why not throw him
what
on? I'd rather have him on than
Mavropanos as a big target man up top.
Iwobi.
Iwobi, Mkhitaryan. Yeah, I mean, Danny Welbeck would probably do more in 10 minutes than Mkhitaryan's done in the last two to three months. So, you know, give it a go. But I think we're all realistic. He probably can't play more than 10 minutes or 10, 15 minutes as an impact sub, but that's all that we'd be looking for.
Why do you think that he hasn't been given a new deal? Because in the first half of the season, Unai Emery seemed to like him. He was playing, he scored some important goals in the Europa League in particular. So yeah, he's been injured, but do you think that's the only reason why Emery hasn't kept him?
Do you know what? I think the narrative at the club has changed. I think that 22-game unbeaten run got them thinking, actually, we might get Champions League sooner than we thought, and therefore we'll get the riches as a result. I'm sort of projecting here. If we get Champions League and we've got the riches as a result, we don't need to get him on, get another 2 years out of Danny Welbeck on the 100 grand a week or 90 grand a week. We can get somebody else in because we can afford to get somebody else in. So that's my kind of gut feel. And I think there's something...
But if we don't
get the Champions League... Well, this is where the narrative has sort of shifted slightly. And I think it's shifted back because the club... Well, they probably will be looking at Welbeck and saying, do you know what? If we have only got £40 million to spend... Maybe we should take a punt.
They've said that he's going, haven't they?
Oh, yes, of course.
He came out and they gave him some sort of memorabilia in the last game of the season. Yeah.
They can take it back. we need you. You can hold on to that.
I think they made their decision even before he got injured. That's my gut feel. I mean, when you listen to them saying that, you know, now from now on, we're not going to let players run their contracts down, especially players that are in their prime. We're going to sit down with them from 2 years, you know, from 2 years before the end of their contract, and we're going to have to make hard decisions whether we renew or sell. And if we sell at the right prices and reinvest the money by buying the right players, I think he was one of those that they probably thought we could do better.
Well, there's a broader question here, not for Arsenal, but for Danny, who we know we like and who smiles a lot. What happens to him? Because even if he does score a goal in this Europa League final, it's looking like he is leaving Arsenal. As you were suggesting, Chris, quite big wages, not a clinical finisher, not a consistent goal scorer, but a useful player, a hard-working player, a versatile player. Where do you see him going?
Well, worst case scenario for him, he could just go to West Ham because they snap up any player that is, you know, got a bit of a reputation and massive wages. So.
And any player from Arsenal, Lucas Perez springs to mind.
And injury problems.
Sami Nasri, injury problems as well. Fits the West Ham bill.
He could probably.
He won't go abroad. I could see him mid-table.
The thing is, unfortunately, because of his injury record, they might put him on some kind of incentivized deal where he's probably not going to get as much as you would have got at Arsenal. But you know, if you play a certain amount of games, and you know, because look at Wiltshire, I mean, you know, they're probably regretting
I think they're definitely regretting.
Yeah, exactly. Andy Carroll as well. You know, so wherever he goes, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him an incentive, slightly lower wages, and incentivize him to sort of like make himself available for a certain number of games a season.
And looking back on his career at Arsenal, he was a signing that divided fans. He was an odd one. It wasn't really expected. It hadn't been touted and vaunted for months. It was a deadline day deal where suddenly it was, oh, Arsenal have signed Danny Welbeck from Manchester United. Okay, 15 million quid, not massively expensive for an England striker. Hard working, scored big goals, not least against United. Are you going to look back on him with fondness? Are you going to think of him as a great, or is there a sense of what if?
No greats. But you know,
no greats.
Yeah. No greats. Get Allegri in now.
I was at Old Trafford when he scored that goal, and the place went off, you know. And the fact that he celebrated as well, the place went off. But then, you know, the one, you know, the big, I think the one that many people remember is the one, the Leicester one, where we should have gone on and won that.
Is that the header?
Yeah. In literally the last second. Yeah. I was actually, I took my wife along to that game, and literally she just followed me in the melee down to the front because we're only 11 rows from the front. Yeah. And as we got back to our seat, she was like, don't ever do that again.
Why did she follow you? I'd have just gone, all right.
No, Chris. No, she was in front of me and she just got swept up.
So hang on a minute. When you said your wife followed you, what you really meant was you guided your wife.
I pushed her down to the front. Yeah. She was like surrounded by literally hundreds of just sweaty, balding men jumping up and down.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. Howard, if you're listening, Chris would like to apologise live on national radio. And Danny Welbeck would like to apologise too, because he's a nice boy and he smiles a lot. But what our conversation is making me realise is that Arsenal don't have enough strikers. It sounds an odd thing to say because their two best players in Aubameyang and Lacazette are both centre forwards, but do they need a couple more, and could one of them be playing for Lille?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and we've actually just had a text into the show from Chris's wife, who has confirmed that she is listening and that she won't, under any circumstances, accept his apology. If you'd like to get in touch, that number is 0208 70 20 558, or you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. And we've been talking about Arsenal's strikers. We've been talking perhaps about their lack thereof. And they are being linked with one fairly pricey forward. And they've been linked with him for some time. I'm always encouraged by these rumours when they rumble on for months. And this is certainly the case here. Nicolas Pepe of Lille, who has been scoring goals at a prodigious rate in Ligue 1. He's got 22 in 37 this season. Is he a man Arsenal need? Is he a man Arsenal can afford?
Go on, Chris.
You're saying that because we all know that this is a plant, because Allegri and Pepe in the same radio show. This has been tailor made for you, Giles. Look at the big, you can't see it out there in radio land, but he's got a big beaming smile. I cannot see this happening purely because we've been briefed all summer, all the lead up to summer. We haven't got any money.
We've only got
40 million
and
quid.
He's going to cost 65.
He's going to cost that. And Lille aren't, they're savvy operators. You know, the president is not going to just turn up to Arsenal and say, I like you guys, I'm going to do you a special deal.
That said, Lille manager Christophe Gaultier has confirmed that Pepe is going to leave. Yeah. So that doesn't, as you say, Chris, mean that they're going to sell him cut price, but they have perhaps weakened their negotiating position. The concern for Arsenal will be that he's also linked with a potential move to United, to Bayern Munich, to Barcelona, all Champions League clubs. If Arsenal get in a bidding war like that, it'll be ruinous, and actually it just won't work.
Yeah, I mean, the chips are against us. I mean, look, LOSC, they have to generate 100 million every summer because they're running at a loss. So that's why they buy young and sell high.
Who's taking all of that 100 million if that's such a perpetual thing?
I read somewhere that they're basically running at a loss. They cannot afford to. I'm not sure. Maybe it was the stadium. I think they own their stadium. Which they're one of the few French clubs that own their stadium. So maybe the paying for that is affecting their pocket. But basically, they have to make 100 million. Aside from those clubs that you mentioned, Johnny, apparently Mbappe. Apparently, according to Paris United, said that for Mbappe to remain at PSG, he's named Pepe as one of the players that he wants to come in. Now, as we know, PSG, they basically bankrolled a whole of the French league. They might not like him, Other clubs might not like him, but they keep them alive by buying their best talent. So I wouldn't be surprised if he goes off there. 65 million at this point in time, too much for us. Same with Zaha, too much for us. But those are the kind of players that I would like to see us sign, because they're dynamic, they're one-on-one players. I think they can not only double up as wide players, but they can actually also play through the middle. And they're young, you know.
Talking of Zaha, there are rumours today that Arsenal could make a move for him, but that they're only willing to pay 40 million quid. Now, Palace are valuing him at, depending on who you believe, 70 million, 80 million, 100 million. Can you see that happening?
40 plus Jenks, apparently.
So hang on, by that logic, we're valuing Jenkinson, exactly, at 60 million English pounds, the finest right back in the league. They've got Wan-Bissaka.
I know, unless they already know that he's out the door. Mm.
But imagine that as a Palace
fan. That is a downgrade.
Yeah, imagine that. Style. You go, all right, lads, we're going to have a really good season. We're losing Zaha and Wan-Bissaka, but we're getting some money, and we've got Jenkinson in at right back, so don't worry.
Yeah, you know, I think it's Jenkinson and Mustafa, Jenkinson, Elneny, and a third player they were saying. They were suggesting it might have been Chambers. But, yeah, look, they're going to push for as much money as they can. They're not going to get 80 or 100 million, I doubt it. That's not what they're
going to do. He's 26 going on. Is he always 27 now?
He's 26.
I think he's fabulously overrated. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's exciting. But I had the Palace guys in here from back of the nest every Tuesday, 7 till 9, and they think he's messy. And I find myself every week wanting to go, lads, I like him, and I know you like him because he's a Croydon boy, but come off it.
Yeah. You're paying the Premier League premium, aren't you? The homegrown premium, the tax. And that's just the way of the world. That's the market will detect how much he costs. Palace, from what I understand, Palace are making moves to bring in Weah, I think it is, from PSG. So they're obviously looking at his successor. So it sounds like they're accepting the fact that he wants to leave, and he'll leave on their terms. But if we get Champions League, maybe the whole kind of horizon, our summer looks completely different if we get Champions League football.
Yeah. So I just looked at some numbers. He's 34 appearances for Zaha this season, 10 goals, 5 assists.
But you know what? That's 10 goals in a team that doesn't score.
Also worth pointing out, he's won an awful lot of penalties, which won't show up as assists, but actually he's had a hand in rather more goals.
When you think Benteke's scored one goal against us in about two, that's the only goal he's scored in about 2 years. They've got Sakho, Championship level striker. He does a hell of a lot for them. He is their one and only attacking outlet, both creative wise and scoring.
But would he even want to come to Arsenal if we're not even in the Champions League? Didn't he say, I want to play Champions League football?
But then Man United, apparently I've read
he's
again,
he's never that, going back to United. No. Surely.
Obviously, it's probably paper, it could be Duncan Castle saying this, but apparently he's got unfinished business.
Well, that sums it up really.
I think, it depends on how much somebody's going to pay him.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. I think the point from the Arsenal point of view is that he's an inconsistent footballer. Yeah. And I'm sure there are Palace fans listening getting angry with me. If I'm talking rubbish, ring me up, tell me why. 0208 7020 558. But for me, if you look at Wilfried Zaha versus Bournemouth on the final day of the season, he is one of the best players in the Premier League. Right? Eddie Howe came out after that game and said, we have possibly not faced a better individual performance all season. Right? This is a manager of a team who's witnessed Mohamed Salah score a hat-trick against his back four. He's witnessed Eden Hazard take them apart. He's saying Zaha's up there. And I agree with him on the one day in four he turns up like that.
Is it one day in four? I don't know. He was brilliant against Cardiff. Brilliant against us. I think he's carried that team. I think what I like about
him... Was he brilliant against us? I wasn't so sure.
No, I thought he was.
One ball over the top, and Mustafi just staring.
No. First half, he was their outlet. First half, he was going down the sides of us. Mustafi didn't... I think, who was it? Mustafi or was it... Yeah, one of them... Or was it the right back? Chopped him down, got a yellow card. Nobody wanted to go near him. He was carrying that threat. The thing is, right, what I like about him is he might have an off day, but the next game he's coming back and he's going to try. That's what I like about Maverick.
That's a good point.
He won't shrink. He will never shrink.
And on that, he responds very aggressively and well to criticism, to boos from the crowd. I think you're spot on, Giles, in that he always has that fear factor and he always gets kicked. Yeah. But for 80 million...
No.
For me, I want consistent finishing.
Yeah.
And Zaha's finishing is not good enough to be an £80 million footballer. I know I'm coming from a generation where I remember Chelsea spending 30 million quid on an ageing Andrei Shevchenko, but at a point where Shevchenko was the guy in terms of centre-forwards. And I remember looking at that and going, 30 million pounds?
They're
and,
mad.
And now I always think back to that and go, 80 for Zaha, you are having a laugh.
I think Palace are in the position where they signed a long contract last year, obviously on the proviso that they can let him go this season, but they might renege on that and say, if you're not getting 80, you're not going anywhere. We don't need to sell you. You're here till 2023. Get your head down, son. Mm. So it's, you know, if they are going to send, he's going to have to sit down with him and come to an agreement. And maybe, I reckon, it's more going to be like 50, 60 million that he'll go for if he does go for that.
Worth noting that he does love the club.
He does love the club. Yeah, and he doesn't want to rock the boat.
Wasn't he an Arsenal fan as
a kid?
Yeah,
he was a gooner as a kid. I think, for him, I think 10, if we can get him, if he can chip in with 10, 15 goal contributions for us, that's fine. That is fine because apart from the front two, nobody else gets anywhere near 10 goal contributions a season for us.
Would you rather have Zaha or Ryan Fraser?
I'd have Zaha all day long.
Well, that's, yeah, an obvious question.
If money's not the problem. If money's not the problem.
If you're not counting any kind of financial element of it. If you say
Fraser's
you can
got
have
as many assists as anybody else in the Premier League.
Yep, he has.
But Zaha's more of an X factor than Fraser is a, you know, drive down the line, ball into the box. Like, it's pretty simple stuff.
I wouldn't even mind both of them. Because, you know, Fraser gives you that consistency.
Greedy.
Yeah. Well, it's only gone about 20 minutes. It's on his last year, isn't it, or something like that. He's going to give you the consistency.
I think if you get Ryan Fraser for 20 million quid, why not? Yeah. Frankly, because you will get more money for him at the very least. Could, of course, be activity at the back as well. We're hearing that Arsenal are monitoring Roma's Greek defender Kostas Manolas, who, of course, had a hand in knocking Barcelona out of the Champions League last year. We've already got one Greek centre-half. Chris, I know you're a fan of his. Two Greek Mavropanos. You see, I forget he even exists. Would you like to add a third?
But I want a profile of it. Well, I wrote something actually yesterday about this. I wrote something about today, but it's all blended into one. We're also linked with this Saliba, William Saliba from Saint-Étienne, and he sounds like the right type of profile player. But when you start to work out the numbers, something's not adding up, because if we lose Koscielny because, you know, he's only got one leg, if Mustafi is supposedly on his way out to somewhere like Milan, then effectively it leaves us with Sogradis. As the only,
I love the way senior, you say Socrates.
It's the only senior sort of experienced centre half, and if you're then getting in a 18-year-old Saliba, and then you've got Sogradis.
Stop it.
Then you've got what? Chambers, Holding. If he comes in, you've got Holding, you've got Mavropanos. That is a very youthful looking.
Chambers, arguably not even a centre half anymore.
No. But that's why we've got these rumours about Kahneman and this Djaney. But actually, we're not getting anyone from Spain, are we? I think some journalist said we're not going anywhere near Spain. But you know, so we've got Djaney, you know, and Manolas and all these other players. So I think there will be, if he goes to buy a youngster like just 18-year-old kid, then I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another sort of like squad player with a bit more experience.
Mm-hmm. We've had a tweet into the show from Martin at MartCAFC45, who says, look at how many penalties you get with Zaha. It's a very, very good point. He's been winning a lot this season and he does add to those gold contributions through them. If we piqued your interest with all of this talk of transfer targets, of transfer rumours, stay with us here on Love Sport Radio, because from 9 until 10, I'll be bringing you our first ever episode of The Rumour Mill. This is the show where we take you through all of the biggest rumour deals of the day. But we're not just doing speculation here. We're cutting through the noise, we're talking to the experts, and we're finding out which of these rumours actually might happen. With that in mind, tonight we are playing Two Truths and a Lie. Which one of the following transfer rumours is a lie? Harry Maguire to Man City, United to offer Alexis Sanchez and cash for Kylian Mbappe, or Zaha to Arsenal for 40 million quid. You'll have to call in later.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunnerstown. And it's a funny time to be an Arsenal fan. We're used to the club winning things, challenging for things, at the very least finishing fourth. Not so. It's a transitional period moving on from the Wenger era, moving into the Emery era, or perhaps the Allegri era, if certain Amiams are to be believed. But are we losing track of the Premier League more broadly? Is what's slowly happening in front of our eyes a massive chasm in quality? Is football more broadly becoming completely divided between the very best and the rest? Because Manchester City only beat Liverpool by a point, but they were playing football on a level that we just haven't seen before. Are we in danger of becoming La Liga?
Or even worse,
Scotland.
Scotland or Germany.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. Germany is a bit farcical, isn't it? Let's face it. I mean, Bayern Munich, I'm sure at the halfway point in this season, Bayern Munich were in meltdown.
Dead and buried.
And dead and buried. And all of a sudden, they've just come and won it again. And
as they always do.
It's like, what's the point?
Yeah. And the thing is, I just get kind of desensitised to it. I know as an Arsenal fan, loads of Arsenal fans would have rather Man City win it than Liverpool. But I actually wanted Liverpool to win it. Not because I like Liverpool. I don't really like Liverpool. But just for something different. Man City, I mean, they win it because they've got the oil state behind them. They've got all these sponsors, these commercial sponsors from their own country or whatever. You know, Pep Guardiola only works with the very best, with the most money. It just becomes a procession. It's like, you know,
the money is just astronomical, though. Since 2010, £1.47 billion Man City have spent. Yeah.
Do you think it's as straightforward as the money? It's obviously not only that, but do you think... But it kind of could be, Chris, in the sense that if you spend over £1 billion, if you throw enough proverbial at the wall, some of it is going to stick. Do you think that actually, even without Guardiola, without a master tactician, if you sign that many players for those big fees, you will eventually create a spectacular team?
I think you have to have a tactician, master tactician behind it all, because as we've seen with PSG, they've got a collection of parts, very expensive parts, but you know, when they get onto the, you know, European stage, they just look like a collection of parts.
Yeah.
You know, whereas with Man City, you can see that there's something, there is a plan there is
a structure, a strategy, an identity.
Yeah, yeah. And it's only going to be a matter of time before they hit the Champions League semi-finals and get to a final if he stays. And I think they want to tie him down for another 4 or 5 years, don't they?
I'd be surprised if that happens, given that his history. But what I think is interesting is if you look at City's recent history with the managers that they've had, Pellegrini, he won the league. Mancini won the league. They're not fantastic managers, tactically speaking, but they were able to get it right. So I think it's not an exact science, but I think if you chuck enough money, you know, one out of three, you might win it. But Guardiola's turned it into, well, we're winning everything and we're winning it soon.
Do you think they'll win it next year?
I think so.
Probably.
Because what they do,
they go and spend another £165 million on the new players.
And that's the thing. They don't spend £165 million on one player. They'll get four or five £50 million players. You know, and it's that collection of those kind of upper-class players.
They've quite literally spent more on their defence than the defence budget of quite a lot of countries.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's just how it is. And that's what makes them such a juggernaut team. Like, they'll spend that kind of money on two or three players in the midfield. If Sané goes, you know, they'll spend another, you know, they'll replace him very well because they've got the money to. They won't spend 100 million. They won't do a Man United, but they will spend, you know, 100 million on two players that are bloody good.
What I would say, though, with your comment about are we in danger of becoming Germany or Scotland, if you look at some of the other leagues and look at how some of our teams have picked up points, the top six really is... worlds apart, or feels like worlds apart from the rest of the division. We were looking at the Italian league, and you've got the Italian teams that are finishing fourth are picking up like 62, 63 points. You know, United finished sixth on 66. We had 70. You know, it was 71, 72 points to get into the top four. That no other division has got that many points.
And also look at the finalists in the Champions League, in the Europa League, the breadth of the depth in that Premier League at the moment does seem to be extreme. But let's broaden this out a bit. I think we're all agreed that City are fantastic and that money has played quite a big part in that. But do you think we're witnessing brilliance, or do you think it's a frustration? As a football fan, do you like the involvement of the money in the sense that you get to watch the best football you could conceive of? Or would you rather it were more natural, the football were less beautiful, but it was more competitive?
This is football. And to try and cap it, you know, is what, you know, some people would rather want to do. It's not right. I think if I was a Man City fan, or if we had Usmanov, well, probably I would, you know, I wouldn't mind. You know what I mean? At least we could compete. I don't begrudge them their money. I just think it's become a procession, and it's not great. It's you know, it's almost becoming a dynasty. What it's creating is a dynasty.
Yeah.
You know, and they're built to like win. He wants them to win.
Like United.
Yeah,
United
exactly.
did it for so long.
Exactly.
I mean, and if it happened to us, you're right. If it happened to us, we'd be laughing our heads off.
So you would take that kind of investment from that kind of background at Arsenal?
I think it would be hypocrites not to.
Yeah.
I think so. I think football has become that now, isn't it? I mean, it's become that.
Do you know, I play Football Manager on my phone, and I deliberately, so I join some other team, and then at some stage I take over to become Arsenal manager, and I'll normally have about 8 to 10 seasons where I'm Arsenal manager, because I know if I win it 8 or 9 times in a row, it's just more fun, just winning it every single time. Mm. It doesn't get any less fun. So that's what we'd feel like as fans. Yeah. I want to have the Football Manager experience at Arsenal.
Yeah, you wouldn't get tired of it. You know, and that's just the way football is. You know, it'd be great if it was a fairer playing field, but then it'll be Americanized, and we don't really want that.
So can Arsenal, without that kind of investment, without that scale of investment, because certainly, obviously, we can't predict 3-4 years ahead, but for the foreseeable future, Arsenal aren't going to be able to come out swinging in the transfer market. Can Arsenal, let alone challenge for the title, break back into that top four without spending hundreds of millions?
Yes.
Top four, yes. Win it, no. Because if you look at every team that's won it, aside from that year of Leicester winning it, all of it is mega bucks. You know, whether it's Man United, whether it's Man City, whether it's Chelsea, every single team have just absolutely blitzed in terms of the transfer market. They've just chucked money at it. So unless you're talking about once every 20 or 30 years, and then that's got to be Arsenal that get it right at that particular moment, and they've got a perfect sort of storm of players that are ready to challenge. Unless that happens, which is unlikely, Arsenal, the only way they're going to win the league is, it feels like it at the moment.
Again, I was listening to Vinay and Raul today, and they were saying that they want to get back into the Champions League. They want to get back into title-winning contention. And their belief is the owners are 100% football fans. They're 100% behind what the club are doing. They want us to win. And their thing is they're 100% behind. Whatever we make, we put right back into the team. But that's basically the extent of it. They're not going to put their own money in it. And Vino was saying it's going to take time where we basically have to increase our revenues, whether it's the comms or tours pre-season tours or any of that kind of side. And then sell really smart. You know, sell smart, sell at the right price, and then reinvest that back in. And I think that's their kind of long-term vision. The only way they're going to sort of like emulate Liverpool is to do that either through the comms, you know, increasing their generating more in their comms, tours and whatnot, and then buying and selling smart.
Mm. What we need is a thoroughly overrated footballer that we can get rid of
for
and be like,
million.
For 160 million quid, and be like, how on earth has anybody paid that for this player,
basically,
because that's what Coutinho. It feels like that Coutinho has effectively transformed Liverpool.
Yeah.
Because you know they had money, they've always spent money, but not to the scales that they've spent it.
But if we look at when Liverpool sold Coutinho, you're absolutely right, Chris, that it ended up being the best thing that could have happened to them. But at the point where they did it, that was really, really frightening for Liverpool fans. Jurgen Klopp was confident, but actually,
was it?
Yeah, because as a fan, you have no way of knowing that you're going to get Mohamed Salah for under 50 million quid and he's going to win consecutive golden boots. You have no way of knowing that Sadio Mane is going to become a star. You have no way of knowing that Firmino is going to be the perfect man to link it all together. That's an awful lot of faith to put in the recruitment side of things. If you as an Arsenal fan were offered, okay, I'm going to sell Aubameyang and Lacazette this summer and you can reinvest the money you get from them in the whole squad, would you be confident that the net return would be a better Arsenal team?
I don't know, but I tell you what, they're 100% behind Klopp.
Yes, and that's part of it. Look at Pochettino as well.
Yeah, and they had belief that, you know, whatever the plan was, he was the right man to see it through. Obviously, a lot ran through Coutinho. He changed it. I think he needed to get rid of Coutinho to change it up and play more his way. I think it was a perfect storm that those three front players can play together the way they do. You know, and it's, you know, it's a luck of the draw. But I think the manager, if you've got somebody, a totem, at the head of the show, that you have 100% belief in, which those Liverpool fans do, and also they got a really good director of football, who his team are fantastic at identifying and getting players and selling players as well. If you've got that kind of combination, that structure, you go places.
The question now for Arsenal fans is whether Unai Emery is a man they can have
This is Love Sport.
Full faith in, and I suspect he might not be. You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard, and Giles Aniam of Gunners
Town. James Giles Aniam.
James Giles. That's got a ring to it, Giles. And what with England, or Britain, I should say, finishing rock bottom of Eurovision and, of course, Brexit, you'd be forgiven for thinking that we're not that popular on the continent. But in footballing terms, that couldn't be further from the truth. All of these elite European clubs seem to want British youngsters, or at the very least, youngsters from British clubs. And now Arsenal are having to deal with the super clubs of Europe trying to poach their young talent. Where has this come from?
Is it not... Giles, you'll probably know this more than me, but did we not win the World Cup, was it the under-18s?
Under-20s, under-17s. Yeah.
And under-17s. So winning breeds interest from the continental, you know, from European clubs. So I suspect there's an element of a lot of teams have taken a notice of some of those players that are winning those competitions. You think about, everyone talks about what happened with Germany, when, you know, they then went on, all of that young group of players that they all won the under 20 and then went on to win a World Cup sort of 4, 6, whatever it is, years later. Maybe that's the same thing's happening. People looking at, the teams are looking at that and saying, I tell you what, we'll have some of those players.
I think you're right. I think apparently a lot of clubs come over to England now. They come over to St George's Park to see how the England setup is, the national setup is, and they come to clubs and they look at their youth academies. And they want the England. They want the England stars, because I was reading an article where these scouts are at a recent under 21s game, and they had the lists. A lot of scouts from clubs were at this England under 21 game, and they just said, "I'd love him, I'd love him, I'd love him, but we can't afford him." And the skill and the maturity level, the difference between the England players and the, I think it's Hungary or whoever it was, Czech Republic, was stark. But they knew they couldn't afford the English players. And that's what it is. A lot of continental clubs now have seen the English system, the way that we're bringing out these young players, is the way forward. And that's why they're going out to Germany. And that's why the French, I think, is it Josh Major at Sunderland is now at Bordeaux?
Yep.
You know, and they, you know, Monaco want Monaco and PSG now want, is it Amici? You know, Tyrese John-Jules, one of our youngsters.
Yep.
And they just want to poach English players. That's just how it is now. It's an arms race, and they see the English talent pool as one of the best in the world.
And that's where I think, if the English clubs are being smart, if we're being smart, the next step really has to be the sort of Spanish model of, okay, well, we'll let this guy go for £1 million or whatever it is, but we'll have a £10 million buyback in within the next 3 to 4 years. Because then if this player explodes as a club, you can say, all right, we'll get him back for 10 million when he's actually a 20 or 30 million pound footballer.
That's spot on. And Real Madrid do that all the time, and quite often they don't even wait the 3 to 4 years. They let Danny Carvajal go to Leverkusen. They gave him 1 year and went, nope, we were wrong, we'll have you back. And they let Mariano go to Lyon. He tore it up and they went, right, you're coming back as well. I think that's really interesting. And I think it's a clever way of doing business, because it's sort of like a more effective version of the loan market, where, okay, you are gambling a little bit, but the rewards can be great. I remember when I saw Chris Willock leave Arsenal and go to Benfica. He left in 2017. And I remember thinking at the time, well, that's a shame, but if the club have let him go, it's because he's not good enough. It hadn't crossed my mind at any point, possibly because, with no disrespect to Benfica, who are a big club, but going to a club in the Portuguese league, I was thinking, it's not a case of us being gazumped. It's that they went, all right, Chris, if you want to go. Do you think we're still at this point where Arsenal are able to hold on to their players, and if they let someone go, it's a conscious choice on behalf of the club? Or could we actually see Arsenal's youngsters getting poached?
Well, I think, I don't know about the Chris Willett situation. I think they wanted him to stay, but he was hell-bent on going. I don't know how well it's turned out, because
he's not getting the team, is he?
59 appearances for Benfica Bay, none for the first team. He is now 21, so he's not a kid in
football. That sounds like a Ryan Gould, doesn't it?
Ryan Gould, there's a name.
Sporting Lisbon now. I think he's just played at Kilmarnock or something. He's going back to Sporting. But, I mean, I think they might have got it wrong. Well, I don't know if they got it wrong there, but they definitely got it wrong with Gnabry, and he's the case in point. And I think they redressed that. They obviously took note of that. And with Per Mertesacker in the academy, they've got all our good youngsters tied down, and they're saying, right, we'll give you time out abroad. Reece Nelson, you go to Germany. Smith Rowe, you go to Germany. You know, I'm sure next season, if Nketiah was supposed to go out to Germany on loan, I think Per Mertesacker's built in links, and there's a pathway for these boys to go out, get experience. And as I said in my tweet, you can't keep every kid. You just can't keep every kid at the club, because not everyone's going to have that pathway. There will be one or two that you will let go. Man City, they let go of Sancho. Okay, he's a £100 million player. They let go of Brahim Diaz, who looks like he's going to be in Zidane's plans next season at Madrid. These things happen. But the thing is, you want to hope that you keep the best ones. You know, that's the key.
Yeah.
Across Europe, a lot of clubs, they lose some kids.
And not do a Gnabry.
But with the Gnabry example, Chris, is where your point about the buyback clauses is just so relevant. You think, why didn't Arsenal? Because at the point where you are selling a player for a fee, for example, as City did with Sancho, you are in the driving seat in terms of those negotiations. Even if the player really wants to go, you are the selling club. You can, at the end of the day, put your foot down, right? Still, just about, even in the era of player power. Why didn't City go, all right, even if the buyback clause is 40 mil, we want a buyback clause. Why didn't Arsenal put one in when Gnabry left?
I always think of him as a humanist. He looks at the compassionate side, and the boy wanted to go, and Tony Pierce didn't do him any right, and it's probably best that he goes. And I just want him to have a good career.
You sound like such a grumbly old man.
I'm sorry. But
is there an arrogance there as well? From not just Wenger, but bosses in general, where you go, you know what? I've made a judgment on this player when he's still a kid. I've decided he's not good enough. I am so good at working out who is good that it isn't conceivable that he might be good enough.
And that's why the Arsenal hierarchy have given the head coaches a much narrower responsibility. You're not allowed to now go out and make those decisions for kids. They've got an academy manager, director, to make those decisions. You collaborate with them, and you come to a shared agreement, and then all parties make that decision. It's not one single point that makes that decision anymore, and that's got to be a good thing, you know.
No, absolutely. And by the way, even the great managers get this wrong. Guardiola was perfectly happy to let Sancho go, and has said he's not coming back. And you think, well, is there an element of pride there, Pep? Because if I were in that position, I would be tempted to put my hands up and go, turns out he's quite good at football.
To be fair to Pep, though, he can say, I just won a treble.
Yeah. And he's the world's best manager.
And also, I can spend 50 or 60 million quid finding a similar sort of... If you've got 50 or 60 million quid to spend on one player, you can probably find a similar sort of Sancho around.
Yeah, well, I mean, Sancho's figures are better than Mahrez's.
And I think, what you've got to remember is Man United let Pogba go for a packet of chips, didn't he? A packet of crisps. Yeah. They had to spend 89 million. Yeah, spend 89 million to get him back.
Other good crisps are available.
But those clubs have the buying power, if they want to bring those players back. If they say, "Watch, Man City probably don't feel that." I'm sure they must be thinking, "Oh, one that got away there." But you know, they've got satellite clubs all over the world. I mean, their academy is probably the envy of the world. They'll probably have somebody coming through, at least another couple of players that are coming through. They probably paid some kid in London and his family to go up to Manchester, you know, to make the move.
No, you're probably right. I mean, of course, Sancho came from Watford originally.
And it's part of the reason why they're being investigated by the UEFA.
You see, that's very interesting. I think there's another point here with these clubs, which is, why don't they learn? Why don't they learn? Chelsea have got it wrong so many times. De Bruyne, error. Salah, error. Lukaku, arguably, error. The list goes on. After one of them, Just one. After Kevin De Bruyne, if I am Abramovich or whoever it is at Chelsea who makes those decisions, I am licking my wounds. And every time I sell a player who has been rated as in any way potentially better than Sunday League level, I am putting a buyback clause in if I can.
I think that's the reason why they're trying to really fight tooth and nail to hang on to Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah.
You know, Bayern Munich really want him, and they're trying to, they're trying all they can to keep hold of the boy. But yeah, they've been burnt a few times.
The thing is, though, Chelsea's model is we want all the players.
Yeah.
Like, let's have like 200,000 yeah. people in our, on our books. Yeah. And when you've got numbers that massive, it's needle in a haystack. They probably would just, they probably didn't even know that Lukaku was there half the time.
Well, to be fair, he didn't really turn up. One potential solution to hold on to your young stars, whilst a little far-fetched, would just be to keep them hidden, to keep them completely out of sight from everyone. And how do you do that? You play your games behind closed doors.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal fan show on Love Sport Radio. And it's a funny point in the season to be an Arsenal player. Other clubs are on holiday. The season is over, but there's one more game left to play. And what a game it is. They're taking on Chelsea in an all-English Europa League final in Baku. Not just for that trophy, but of course for a place, in Arsenal's case, in the Champions League. So the players have to keep ticking over. They have to keep their fitness. With no league games to play, the solution is, of course, friendly matches. And Giles, I'm led to believe the Gunners have been getting involved in a few behind-closed-doors games.
Yeah, there was one this weekend, should I say, and Danny Welbeck scored a hat-trick in that. There's another one against a team called LASK Linz, the Austrian team. I think they finished second in the Austrian league. They're playing them on Thursday, Friday. Again, it's just I think it's probably to keep the players at a certain level, you know, in terms of their, you know, making sure that their loads are at a certain level, they don't drop below that. And obviously, you know, if there's any chance, as we said earlier, if there's any chance of Danny Welbeck making the bench, then these two games will help make that help Emery and his team come to a decision.
The extra sort of places as well. If you've got 12 places on the bench, you know, it gives a few players an opportunity to say, actually, I can, you know, I can make the squad of a Europa League final, even though they probably know that some of them won't play.
Experience.
Imagine being able to be able to be in that team that gets to go to a Europa League final, being part of that squad.
So looking at our conversation about hanging on to the kids is one way of incentivising them to stay at Arsenal, giving them that taste, just putting them on the bench, the likes of Saka or Amici, and just showing them what might be if they knuckle down and don't get their heads turned by the likes of Bayern Munich.
Absolutely, but I mean, I think one of the reasons where some Arsenal fans aren't happy with Emery is because they think he's reneged on his promise of blooding more youngsters. And they probably were expecting to see more youngsters being blooded in the Europa League group games. Obviously, we went out early in the League Cup. I mean, it's one thing, you know, put him on the bench for a showpiece final. I'm sure they'll love the taste. But next season, I think people will expect him to be a bit more committed to, you know, giving more of our youngsters a chance.
I kind of agreed with his approach, though, with the Europa League, because what he wanted to do was get all the points on the board with the group stages, get all the points on the board first. So he did play stronger teams towards the beginning of it. And then it gave us a bit of a buffer to then play some of the reserves or play some of the squad players. I kind of understand that. But, you know, if we lose this and we're back into the Europa League next year, I think all Arsenal fans are probably getting a little bit fed up of it. And we should probably just go all in for the domestic qualification for the Champions League. That's my view, because, I don't know, I'm getting a bit sick of playing FC Minsk and other teams like that. So.
Carabag.
Is there a case for Arsenal, of course another fine Azerbaijani team there, Giles, is there a case from an Arsenal perspective, whilst you want the players to still be sharp, to still be match fit and have their heads in the game, is there a case for a breather? Is there a case for saying, lads, have 5 days off, or even, we're going to keep you together, but we're going to have a squad training camp read night out in Dubai or wherever it may be, just to let them get their hair down a little bit?
I think they'll manage. Emery's done it 3 times, so he knows how to manage this situation. And if he feels that a couple of behind the closed doors games are a way to keep the boys' fitness levels at a certain level, then that's fine, you know, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to give them too much intensity, because, you know, you might break them down, but you don't want it to be too low neither. And so obviously you want to keep your first 14 at that higher peak, and then the rest at a certain another peak level, and that's what he's going to be, him and his team are going to be doing now.
If you were in charge, would you give them a few days off?
I think you give them a few days off. I think
get on the beers, lads. Yes.
No, but
let's go to Tbilisi. We hear it's lovely that time of year.
Yeah, let's start walking, and we'll have a beer a day, and we'll get to the final on time. Yeah.
I think as the season closed after the Burnley game, they probably said, "All right, go on. Don't get too mad, but, you know, have a few days off.
Have a sherbet."
Yeah. Wednesday, we're back at it. You know, we start, you know, so last Wednesday would have been, you know, they would have been back at it and working their way up to a sort of a peak fitness, or, you know, it's all about loading and equilibriums and whatnot.
He said post the Burnley game that they're going to treat it like a international break, like, didn't he? Because I think during the international breaks you have, you know,
just Carl Jenkinson
Saturday,
training on his own.
But international breaks, and then you've got the Saturday, Sunday, and then the following week they start, and it's a little bit longer than that, because I think it was 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks, yeah.
But it's the right approach. It's, you've got to keep the gap. I think the players are sensible enough. They'll have their game
done?
Faces.
Actually, you know what we've done? If we played yesterday, it's a Sunday, Thursday. So it's kind of like he's played
keeping
yesterday.
Keeping him ticking over.
Yeah, and he's going to play again on Thursday against this Austrian team. So it's kind of, you know, it's almost like he's trying to mirror a league season or domestic, or, you know, a league season. Mm. So
very, very cleverly handled. I'm interested by this partying, have a few beers suggestion, because whilst we are joking, this is an old conversation, isn't it? It was one that came to the fore with reference to Arsenal at the beginning of the season, with those, of course, unconfirmed and profoundly denied allegations that were levelled at Arsenal, that with some papers, I think the front page of The Sun, alleging that they'd been taking nitrous oxide and having a few beers or what have you. Obviously, whether or not that was true, you don't want your players to be going mad, but at the same time, they're human beings, they need to unwind. If there was to be a squad end-of-season night out before the final, not the day before or the week before, but if they were to go out to a club and have a few drinks, Giles, you're shaking your head.
Shaking my head.
Is that something you can't ever...
No. You've got a final to look forward to.
In a fortnight?
No, absolutely not. Let your hair down. Have some time with your friends, your family, but don't go full on with those happy balloons or whatever, happy crack, whatever they call
them. Which, of course, was absolutely denied by everyone at the club.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, go out, you know, I think Mesut Ozil went back to, I think he's gone to Turkey to meet the president.
He's just playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
And he's got, I think he's in Turkey, isn't he? He's meeting President Erdogan again.
Is he meeting Erdogan?
Yeah. So, that, you know, you have
his political career, obviously, when after he retires.
Yeah.
So, you're having your die on time. I think Iwobi and one of the players were pictured with Tchoubarakpom somewhere, you know.
Greece.
Yeah,
Tchoubarakpom, by the way, scored an overhead kick in the Greek Cup final.
Yeah.
Good on you. Did they
and
win?
And won it. Yeah,
they won it. Nice. And he broke down. He was talking about his journey and, you know, how difficult it was for him. And fair play to him.
Yeah, in fluent Greek.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so, look, you can let your hair down, but all things within reason. The beer culture, nah, that's not football. That's not football anymore.
Not one, Chris.
I know.
We know your
Giles
wife's listening, so you've got to be careful.
Giles only does ginger ale, so, you know. Me, personally, I'd say go for it.
Would you? As an Arsenal fan, it doesn't bother you?
Not when there's 2 weeks. Not when, like you said, not
depends
when
how bad
weeks.
The hangover is.
Yeah. I mean, blimey, that's one heck of a hangover. It's
right,
taking you 2 weeks.
The message seems to be, relax a bit, but there is a final, and they will know this, right? It's not just the fact that they're professionals. They want to win. We question the mentality of this Arsenal side a lot, but they're not messing around. They want silverware. They want to win a European Cup. They want to qualify for the big one, the Champions League. And all the fans want is to be able to get there.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunnerstown. And we were talking at the beginning of the show how, despite the outrage that Arsenal have only been given 6,000 tickets for that Europa League final in Baku, they're actually struggling to shift them. Current rumours suggest that the club have only sold 3,000. We're hearing that Chelsea are really struggling, selling under 1,000 so far. But one of those intrepid 3,000 is a member of the Arsenal Fan Show. It is, of course, Charlie East, AFC Charlie, who joins us on the line now. Good evening, Charlie. Firstly, how on earth, why on earth did you decide to brave the 43 trains or 27 hours of driving to get you to Baku?
Good evening, guys. How are you?
All right, Charlie.
Hello, mate.
I'm actually flying direct, so I'm on a six-hour flight.
How do you swing that?
Friends paid in a lot of money for
powerful
it,
places.
But, yeah, no, I've paid a lot of money for it, but £1,150.
Just for the flight?
Just for flight.
I hope that gets you back as well, mate.
Yeah, it gets me back as well. It's a nice flight time. I go out morning before the game and I come back the evening day after the game. So two nights in lovely Baku. Which is the weather at the moment, 29 degrees, so I'll bring my swimming trunks.
Jealous, mate. Very, very jealous.
I saw
jealous.
You and your pins when we was out in Valencia, mate.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I think, I mean, not many people are going. My reason behind going, obviously everyone's situation is different. I mean, I'm 30 years old. I've seen Arsenal playing two European Cup finals. I go every game home and away. I just thought, I've been to Huddersfield, I've been to Burns, I've been to Blackpool's.
Why not Baku?
Why not going to the big one? Do you know what I mean? So it's on the credit cards, and I'll worry about it later. One of those ones.
Do you not, Charlie? It's Chris here. Do you not? Is there not part of it that you had to wrestle with it in your mind in terms of, because it must have cost more than the season ticket that you got?
Yeah, no, it has. And if I'm totally honest with you, I was fully expecting going anyway, and I was always thinking, I was looking at flights since we got Rennes, really, thinking that we'd get there. And I've been putting away a bit of money on the anticipation that we would be going. So that was my reason behind it. And, I mean, I understand everyone. It is ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous that we've got to go all the way over there. Obviously, UEFA doesn't know that it's going to be two London clubs before the tournament starts. Just happened to turn out that way. But if people can do it, they can do it. But I spoke to someone today in the box office saying they get a lot of returns on tickets as well at the minute. People can't get the travel, so they bought the tickets on the hoping they'd be able to get something. But lots of people are actually returning tickets now, and the club are giving their money back if people can't get the travel. Really? But I do find it, well, I don't know what you guys think, that we're sponsored by Emirates.
It's just terrible, isn't it? Yeah.
You'd like to think that they would maybe sort of say, if Arsenal done a flight at cost, I think people would appreciate something like that, wouldn't they?
They would. They would have. And and that's why, really quite disappointed with the club. I mean, okay, they've said that they've gone to UEFA and asked why, they've put it here and there. But if they really, really cared about the fans, they'd do a hell of a lot more in trying to get more fans over there. Like we said, I mean, I think we have only taken up half the allocation right now. Is that right? Is that what you heard, Charlie?
Yeah, 3,000 from Bretton Mine. And a lot of people getting refused visas as well. So that was a bit of a hassle as well, to be fair.
We've got Chelsea fan in the office who is going to Baku, and he's just been refused a visa on grounds that his passport photo isn't clear enough. And he was saying today, well, it's good enough for my passport, so why is it not good enough for the Azerbaijani embassy?
To be fair, I mean, I applied for mine. I got the visa back in an hour and a half. So
it's because of your reputation, Charlie. They know you're a good bloke.
Exactly that. I think that was the exact reason. But it's one of those ones. I mean, like, I'm in a fortunate position at the moment. I could do it. The game is actually on the night of my birthday, so there's not a hope in hell I'm missing it.
They better win it for you.
So I'm hoping we can go out there and do the business. I do feel it is ludicrous. And what I am slightly worried about is I think the ground's going to be empty.
Mm. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, I think 60,000. I just cannot see how it's going to be full up. It's not, is it? And I think that will be a shame. We might have like a pre-season friendly feel about it, which would be a massive shame, because especially for us, it's our biggest game since Champions League final by country mile. So you want it to be full up, and Chelsea's as well since their cup final, Champions League final. So unfortunately, it is going to leave a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. But it's so important for us now, though, guys, isn't it? Yeah. The way the season's ended up, it's literally, as we said, Baku or bust. We've got to go and win.
Charlie, how many? You mean you're obviously chatting to loads of guys that are making their own ways. I mean, what kind of fantastic, sensational routes have you heard so far? I mean, I've heard of people going to Tehran,
to Tbilisi to get the night train down. I know someone flying to Sofia, and then Sofia down to Baku, but then their flight. I know someone else was flying into Istanbul. And the flight's been cancelled from Istanbul to Baku, and they can't get another one. So now they've lost their money on London to Istanbul flight.
I hope they like Turkey.
Yeah, in Turkey, trying to fly Turkey. I know lots of people going via Kiev. Guys, you know, football fans are very strange creatures. People always find a way, invariably, to get there, don't they, if they can. Obviously, it's costing a lot of money. It is, and it generally is. And obviously, I probably haven't got the money at the moment, but I've just took a sacrifice and I'll sort of worry about it later.
Right.
But hopefully it's all worth it.
Hopefully it is. And it's on your birthday. We need that win. We need the win, of course, for you on your day as well. Stay with us, Charlie, because I've got a couple more questions for you on how you chose your route.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Howard and Giles Aniam of Gunnerstown. And we've also got AFC Charlie on the line, who is one of the intrepid 3,000 Gooners who is going to Baku for that Europa League final. He's found a way, and he's found a fairly clever way. Charlie, you're paying through the nose for it, but you have managed to find direct flights to and from Baku. It's a pretty good deal. But if you hadn't been able to do that, if you hadn't been able to find that flight, would you still have gone? And if you would have still gone, which of the fairly complex options for getting to Azerbaijan would you have taken?
I mean, I was, to be fair, since we beat Napoli, I was looking at routes every day virtually and seeing the prices go up as the days went on. The route I probably would have taken was flying to Istanbul on the Monday night, which is bank holiday. And it was a flight out on a fairly big airline going to Baku Tuesday morning. And then coming back was Thursday night and coming back to London on Friday. So it's actually been away the whole week. And that still worked out about 600 odd quid. So it was quite a... after the faffing about, I know it is a bit more money, but I just thought to myself, it's all well and good going out there. It's a good adventure. If you suddenly get beat and you've got to do like a 2-day trip home, it's going to be horrible.
It's a long way back.
So at least I thought maybe direct, and I know it's a bit more money, but I've not got to worry about it. And the plane I'm on as well is actually an Arsenal plane. It's Arsenal fans only.
How many people are on the plane, Charlie, if you don't mind me asking?
300 odd, so I've heard.
Wow.
There's 300 Arsenal. I'm not going to mention the name, but there's a company that do lots of flights for football clubs.
But this wasn't arranged by or through the club. It was Arsenal fans.
This is a private Charlie company. They do lots of flights, doing trips to that. Joshua Fire, and they do sport events. They're doing lots of flights for the Champions League final, for Liverpool and Tottenham and so on. So they've done an Arsenal trip, and they also done a Chelsea trip and a mixed trip. And I don't think the Chelsea one's gone out, but the mixed one has still gone. It's majority Arsenal, so here.
Now, Charlie, if private companies and individual Arsenal fans can sort direct travel to Baku, why can't the club do that? Why can't the club help out and make it easier for their supporters to go and help the team? Because that's good news for Arsenal anyway. The more fans in that stadium, the more support the boys will have.
I'm quite bewildered that they haven't done that, to be fair, and Chelsea as well. These clubs turn over millions and millions of pounds. And they're quick to have a go at UEFA about the ticket allocation, which is their right to do, which I agree. But why are they not doing more for the fans? I mean, and Arsenal as well, another cheeky thing they've done at the moment. They haven't given us our season ticket renewal price yet.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're waiting to see if we're in Champions League football next year or not. And you can guarantee there's going to be a good 300 quid difference between Champions League or Europa League. Which, you know there is. And they're going to send you your renewal on the 1st of June and probably say, hey, we need it back on the 5th of June. And it's just a little bit out of touch for the fans. And I know Arsenal have come out with a big statement against UEFA, but it is, they could do more. They can do. And I think the club being a bit disappointed by the club that they've not done more, really. Because I know it's responsible by Emirates, a lot of people saying that, and we are, but not even that, just charter some other planes. This other company since done it. They've got three flights going to Baku.
Yeah.
Why can't Arsenal do it?
It's frustrating. It's really frustrating. And it's not like there isn't enough airfields that are around the southeast that couldn't be, you could find. I mean, you know, for the, some of the more well-known airports, the Stansteads, the Heathrows, you could maybe understand because, you know, they have flights going out. I mean, I live near Heathrow. They have flights going out every 30 seconds. So you can understand, well, where are we going to fit in these extra 100 planes? But you've got places like Northolt. You've got so many
different Southend.
There are so many different areas which probably have capacity, and it just doesn't feel like enough people have given enough.
I think Baku Airport have tried to have a bit of a say on it as well, which is another ridiculous decision about even holding it at the venue.
Yeah.
They can have a certain amount. So my friend who runs the company who I've got on this flight with, I asked him about my baggage allowance, and he said, oh no, I'm your hand luggage, because we've been told there's literally like the timings and getting the slot we've got, I can't really argue it, that we can't have no luggage underneath because of the timings. We've got to get land straight off the plane.
Are you going on a magic carpet?
I think they said the airport can only take about 10,000 to 15,000 people.
Yeah, and they're saying about baggage as well.
Yeah.
That's farcical.
The conditions of getting the slot.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So so here's my thing. Where are the checkpoints that UEFA make to say, right, let's look at what the suitable locations are for a venue. Right, how many seats are there in the stadium?
But they don't
care.
Does
it have the infrastructure?
They can't care, because if they have these checklists and they're looking at it, they wouldn't do this. Mm. Because I'm not even coming from the ignorant English perspective of, oh, well, it's two London clubs, so let's play it at Wembley. No. But I am looking, and I'm more than happy to have it played in Azerbaijan. If it can be done. I mean, there's a broader conversation, really, by the way, about their human rights record. Yeah. But at the point, don't tell me, as you're suggesting, Chris, that UEFA haven't looked at this airport and haven't gone, oh, I tell you what, it's not exactly Terminal 5, is it?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
Make your decisions based on the fans. It's not complicated.
And the thing is... The thing is, infrastructure-wise, I don't think it's UEFA's responsibility to make sure that the airport... as enough people to go through it. I think
it's, should that's be, that, though,
no? No, that should be Azerbaijan. They were awarded the venue, the location, and they should, because when you look at the Olympic, when cities are awarded Olympics 5-7 years in advance, they make all the plans. They make sure the infrastructure is correct, hotels, the Olympic Village, blah blah, transport, security. You know, that should have been and Azerbaijan aren't a poor country. They're oil rich.
But then UEFA should have done their due diligence.
They should have done their due diligence.
And looked at it, you know.
But how do we know? I'm playing devil's advocate here. How do we know Azerbaijan didn't say, yeah, we'll get all that sorted?
Yeah,
but that's UEFA's job, right?
You've got to think as well regarding UEFA. So I know that, as you just said there, Johnny, I'm not one of these people that think, oh, every cup final should be in Paris, every cup final should be in Amsterdam. I mean, I do agree, though. Branch out of it and I like it. In fact, as a football fan who goes to places, I like going to new places. Some of the places I've been in my life, without Arsenal, they've been there. So I get that. But I supposedly didn't Seville, it was between Seville and Baku, between the last two.
Well, Seville's
the
next
last two host cities for this final.
I think Gdansk is next year, and then
I've been to Gdansk last year, England game.
And then to
Russia. What a beautiful place that is. Easy to get to. It was lovely.
Cheap to get to. You can get there by train, can't you, Charlie?
Yeah, I know. So anywhere in mainland Europe, you can always find a way within a reason.
Yeah.
Which makes it accessible. Even all these Tottenham fans saying, oh, Madrid is dear. A lot of them are flying to Gibraltar, driving down somewhere, getting a train. There's ways around.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This is not. It's
inaccessible.
I've read something the other day that Baku is closer to Mumbai than it is London.
Yeah.
Crazy.
How long would it take if you went via Mumbai, Charlie? Did you consider that option?
you know what? I know someone actually going via Oman. And
no,
Dubai.
You don't.
I do, yeah.
Do you actually?
Someone I know is going through Oman. They're flying to Oman. They've got a 3-hour layover, and it's an hour and a half flight from Oman.
Yeah, I know someone's going via Dubai.
Yeah, a couple of Dubai. That's a very dear route, though.
Yeah.
Dubai,
yeah. One of the Mark's mates.
As I said, it has been a big headache, and I'm sure that we all agree, everyone in that room. Obviously, everyone has a bit of whinge up about obviously getting as long as we win, that's the most important thing. We have to win this week. Have to win.
Yeah.
And I think the Chelsea side at the moment, with a couple of injuries they've got, Loftus-Cheek is a massive plus for us. He's been their best player lately. I generally think we've got such a good opportunity to go win this competition. And Giles, I know we spoke about weeks before that Emery will probably be judging his first season by, and you're right, that people are going to think about the poor running we had towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
But if he goes and win a European trophy in his first season,
yeah,
for me, that's fantastic. And then he can build on next season. Mm. Champions League, we've got. I know for a fact that the club have got a list of transfer targets, which they've spoken to a lot of them already, and it's a Champions League list, a Europa League list.
Yeah.
So it's important that we've got some players that have verbally agreed to come to us, but we have to be in the Champions League. Yeah.
Sorry, Charlie, are you saying there are players who have already potentially agreed to move?
There's been talks of certain players, and obviously Champions League is a big thing. So let's hope we get it.
Interesting stuff. I've just got to ask you, finally, mate, do you think that UEFA care about football fans?
No, not at all. I'm sure somewhere in UEFA has had a large deposit in their bank account just to be in Baku.
That, of course, would be denied by everyone at UEFA and Azerbaijan. And I'm sure these are all unconfirmed suggestions that I'm sure aren't the case. But if I gave you an opportunity to talk openly and politely, broadly, to UEFA about how you feel about how they've handled this final, what would you say?
I would say to them, I would just talk to them and say, what are your reasons behind, obviously, why you have it there? And I understand they're going to come back with saying, we want to go to new venues, sort of take football around the whole of Europe. But then you've got to answer the question, sort of, did you look at the flights that could come in? How many people do you expect? So you've got 60,000 capacity stadium, you've got 6,000 per sets of supporters. Where are the rest of the tickets getting distributed to? First of all, where the rest are those 48,000? Who are getting those? And as I say, 20,000 locals, that's fine. Where are the rest of the 20,000? And then you can sort of work out. Because I guarantee even UEFA delegates are not going to be going because they can't get the flights. I see a UEFA competition the other day. It said, win Europa League tickets. And in the small print, it says, oh, by the way, you have to find your own travel and accommodation. So they can't even give their own competition. This is on the UEFA website. They cannot give away tickets to competition without including travel.
And that's why I reckon, Charlie, the backlash of this is next season. I mean, if this final goes ahead and it's half empty, or you know, there's swathes of empty seats, potential sponsors next season aren't going to want to go and sponsor that game in Gdansk. I mean, it's no good to us Arsenal and Chelsea fans because you know it's happening now, but you know it's not good for them going forward.
So UEFA are a little bit lucky that, to be fair, they're a little bit fortunate that is Arsenal Chelsea.
Yeah.
Because around Europe, people are going to want to watch that.
Yeah.
No disrespect to other teams. If we're going to have a Frankfurt v Valencia, no disrespect to any Frankfurt Valencia fans, has that got a big pull for the rest of Europe?
No.
Really?
No.
Nope. Obviously, we will watch it because it's a Europa League final. But the week where you've got Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Tottenham, the Premier League's the most popular, biggest league in the world. So it's got a world pull. Frankfurt Valencia hasn't got. So the UEFA are quite fortunate. I think that is Arsenal, Chelsea. Mm. Just the sort of the fact that it's going to be quite a big gap. And there's a few stories behind it. Hazard's last game for Chelsea, Cech's last game for Arsenal, things like that. Ramsey's band that go out there being sort of in the fans. So there's little stories behind it.
And the English dominance of Europe, yeah. So.
The English dominance of Europe, yes, which I'm sure the rest of Europe don't like. It's what I do on purpose.
Charlie, it's going to be a fantastic week and it's been fantastic talking to you. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Charlie East there, AFC Charlie, who is normally of the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport Radio and will be back with us very, very soon. We've talked about the travel, we've talked about the logistics, but coming up, how are we feeling about the actual game? You're listening to the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And amongst all of this talk of our fury, our concern about the difficulty for not just Arsenal fans, but Chelsea fans as well, trying to get to Baku for that Europa League final, easy to forget that there is an actual game of football that's going to go on as well in Azerbaijan. And lads, how are you feeling about it?
Nervous.
You said terrified a minute ago.
I'm terrified, I'm nervous, but I'm also worried because I'm not sure, and we said about this in the back, I'm not sure that we've got the same personnel that can dominate Chelsea. I'm looking at the result, the 2-0 result, the team that played, and Emery went with a diamond 4-1-2-1-2. Aaron Ramsey right in the centre of that. And he's been pivotal, and you can just, if Aaron, it feels like if Aaron Ramsey was in the team this week, this coming game, I'd be feeling a lot more confident.
Yeah. Because he just disrupted Jorginho. He took the game away from Jorginho, and also was an asset in going forward offensively. We've got Ozil in that position. Probably it'll probably be Ozil, whether he plays a diamond four or three at the back again. It's going to be Ozil supporting the two attackers, and he's peripheral. He's a peripheral influence now. And through the latter stage of this UEFA League chat campaign, it's been the front two that have dragged us through to this final.
Yeah, and my worry is they get isolated. There's been teams, there's been games this season where if they're isolated, we've looked very, very average. And that's my really big worry about this game. If Chelsea press us, if they have more of the ball than us, if they push us further and put us under more pressure, have we got that link player? Is Ozil capable on his form, on his current form? Yeah. He's capable on his current form. Is he capable of dictating this game?
You just got to hope it's a showcase final. It's a showpiece final. He's up for it. He wants to show the world that he's still got it, you know, and he comes to the party. I mean, with him in the team, you kind of lose, you lose one defensive action because you're kind of carrying him defensively. But you're just hoping that where he can dominate is with his on the ball skills and his off the ball skills, running into space and finding space for us. That's what you want him to do. That's what I was hoping to see at Valencia. That's what I didn't see at Valencia, and I was quite disappointed.
Talking about that concerning possibility of the Arsenal front two finding themselves isolated against Chelsea, assuming or imagining that Unai Emery does go for that 4-3-1-2. Let's imagine that Arsenal find themselves 1-0 down 60 minutes in and they're struggling to bring Aubameyang and Lacazette into the game. What's the solution? If you're Unai Emery, what tactical tweak do you make? Maybe you don't need a tactical tweak. Maybe a player has to do something different. But how do you involve them?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to a three at the back and pushes the two wing-backs forward to make that
so
kind of attack.
So you bomb Kolasinac and Maitland-Niles in?
Yeah. And to sort of like make that kind of more attacking efficiency. That's what he likes to do. He says that a three at the back can be offensive if you play it correctly. So I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe he starts with three at the back and switches to a four, or he starts with a four and switches to three. Who knows? But yeah, he's not got a lot of options on the bench, to be honest with you.
That's the problem. I think if everyone was fit, do you think he would go with that formation that we played at home where it was diamond?
I thought he would have at certain points before, and he's gone three at the back. And I'm like, didn't understand that. And then against Tottenham, I thought he'd go three at the back. He went and played four centre-halves.
Yeah.
And nearly won the game.
Yeah.
You know, so it's difficult to know what kind of team he's going to put out there. But, you know, the good thing is they're equally as damaged as us in terms of injuries. I mean, you know, the kid...
Loftus-Cheek is out. Yeah. Hudson-Odoi is out.
Yeah, there's question marks about Conte.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so that would be a big blow, and that would be a big plus for us if Conte's out.
I've got a feeling he's probably going to make it, but if he's out, then their midfield isn't as strong as it could be. You know?
Very true. One potential subplot for this final is that it could and probably will be Eden Hazard's last ever game in a Chelsea shirt. He is a man who likes the big occasion. He's a man who wants to be remembered, who wants to leave a legacy. Are you concerned as Arsenal fans that we might see, even in terms of Hazard's normal brilliance, a really elevated performance, because he's going to want to put on a show and say thank you to all of those Chelsea fans?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Jorginho's nullified, wasn't having his game, he's going to drag that. He's going to try and drag that team to a win. And I worry that Maitland-Niles will have quite a game, quite a torrid game, because they'll be channeling that his section. And what I saw at Valencia is it took a little while for Emery to realise that boy needed help against Guedes. Hazard's a level or two above Guedes. And he will be looking to exploit Maitland-Niles, and we've got to do something to combat that, whether it's pushing Torreira out wide, which would make sense if you're playing a 4-3-3, push Torreira on the wide right-hand side, or make Aubameyang do their kind of the doggies up and down, which he did really well.
Yeah.
And I think our front two are going to have to double up in terms of duties again if we've got any chance of winning this game. because Hazard's going to be on. He's going to be on
and
fire.
He does love playing. I mean, he's had some very good performances against us. Do you remember he left Koscielny on his backside a couple of times?
I don't want to talk about that goal.
Yeah, remember Spawn Coquelin, didn't he?
Yeah, it's the Coquelin. It's not even the Koscielny fall. No. It's the Coquelin fall in midfield that I still see in my sleep.
Yeah, that was not nice. But that's happened. He's done that. He's done that to us a few times. Yeah. He's always popping up. I feel like even when he's not been fully fit and he's played us, he's still had an impact. Yeah. He's, you know, apart from the home game this year where we beat them 2-0, he's had an impact in every single one of the last three or four matches against us. Yeah, I mean, so I think he will. I would guess that he will have an impact. He will probably score. We will need to get two or three, probably about six, knowing Arsenal.
That's about the same number of trains, of course, the fans will have to get to get there. In terms of Arsenal, then, who has the potential to become a real hero in Baku?
The front two.
Yeah.
Only the front two?
They're the most likely heroes because they're the star quality players that we've got.
Yeah.
And they come to the party. You know, they're ready. It's like they have this look between them like, well, okay, well, we're going to have to sort this out ourselves here.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And that's what they've done recently. They've just looked at each other and been like, okay, let's just drag this lot through.
If they're not going to do it,
we're screwed. Yeah. It does feel a little bit like that because you know, you look at the players and you look at Ozil, he's not really in form at the moment. Torreira, is he that sort of player? Then you've got if Guendouzi plays, you know, is he that sort of player? Not really. You know, young player, he's tailed off again this season. Xhaka, you know, what's he? He's not.
We haven't got any. That's why we need. I mean, we've talked about transfers already, but that's why we need Mavericks.
Mm. How much more confident would you be talking of Mavericks with a fit Aaron Ramsey in that squad?
100% more confident.
Double as confident.
I would absolutely be. Yeah. Because even the Napoli game, the Napoli away game, until he went off injured, you could tell that he was finding spaces. Yeah. He was closing. He was energetic, and that was setting the tone for the rest of the players in the team. Yeah. Without that, who is setting the tone for the game? Who is setting our pace as a team?
Yeah, just setting the tempo. There's no one else. I just hope that Cech has a great game because it's his final game for Arsenal against Chelsea. He'll want to go out as a winner.
Imagine that if Cech wins a Europa League final on penalties against Chelsea in what is potentially his final game as a player at all.
Well, if he goes to penalties, then we are screwed because his penalty record is atrocious.
That's very, very true.
So it'd be good to see him go out on a high as well. But we just need it because if we don't get Champions League, as Charlie said, if we don't get Champions League, we've got a Europa League list of players. And, you know, we don't want to pay in it. And that was a third season in, you know, in these...
Damaging financially, damaging in terms of the reputation, the brand of the club, everything.
The one positive, and there is probably more than one, but a major positive for Arsenal going into this game is that actually they've been quite good against Chelsea in cup finals of late.
Yeah, I think it's only the 2007 League Cup final that we've lost recent. We beat them in 2017 in the cup final.
Yep.
Which
I wasn't expecting that in the slightest. I remember being in the pub beforehand saying to everyone that would listen, that's it, we're going to get done. It's my self-defense mechanism.
And Holding was brilliant that game against Diego Costa. But yeah, we've generally had a really good record against them in cup finals. I think 2001 was it? It's only Ray Parler. Remember that was Tim Lovejoy. Yeah. You know, so we've had a really good record against them, and hopefully, long may it continue.
Is it going to continue in Baku? That is the big question.
Yes.
I want to say yes. You know, there's little things like, you know, Unai Emery's reputation. The fact that one of the things he has been good at this season is setting up our team against the bigger teams. He has known how to do that. He's fallen away with some of the lesser games, if you like. And also, when Mr. USB has himself a week or two to prep for something, you know, he's got enough time to practice, you know, to look at every inch of detail of Chelsea. So those are the things in our favour. The things that aren't in our favour are that we've not been great in European Cup finals, broadly speaking, in our history. Chelsea, I don't know, they don't have very much. It feels like they don't have that much to play for. They do have a cup final to play for, but they've already won the Europa League.
More pressure on us, isn't there?
Yeah, they've already won the Europa League a few seasons ago. They won the Champions League a few seasons ago. They're already in the Champions League. Exactly, they finished third.
Yeah.
You know, for Chelsea, it's, you know, if they lose, it's going to be you know, horrible for their fans and the players. But they'll be like, well, we're in Champions League next season, so, you know, onward. Whereas if Arsenal lose, if Arsenal lose, it's going to feel like the whole world is just going to swallow us up.
Stakes are much higher for us, aren't they? Yeah. Much higher.
Arsenal do have the most successful coach in the history of this competition. How important is Unai Emery's expertise going to be?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we employed him.
Yeah.
And he said that, you know, this is his comfort zone. This is his competition. He felt very, very, he was very, very clear about this. This is the competition he wanted to win. He's been very clear about the kind of, the way that he sets us up. It was only the Rennes game, really, the first leg, when Sokratis went off, that we kind of, you know, came a cropper. But generally, you know, in the knockout competition, at the knockout stages, he's been on the money. You know, Valencia, people thought that Valencia would give us a tough time. You know, we sorted them out, and Napoli, and he's I'm sure he's, you know, I'd back him.
I'd back him as well. It's been a tough road for Arsenal to get to the final. It's going to be a tough road for the fans to get that as well. But we can only hope that it'll be a win and Champions League qualification for the Gunners.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.